Here we are back again on a Sunday, hoping to hear something of value and worth that might propel us forward into the week and beyond. And so let's hope that I've come up with something, because, you know, the thing about Unitarian Universalism is that for a very long time we've been on the cutting edge of doing justice works. Our denomination was there in the anti-slavery movement. Our denomination was there with women's rights and with women's suffragettes, right? We've been a part of the moral compass of the United States for a very long time, and yet it's been more difficult for us to bring things from a kind of national or even an international standpoint and bring it into our own lives individually. And most assuredly, it's been very difficult for some congregations to live out the principles of our denomination. And so this morning I wanted to highlight a few things that have been happening with us that I'm hoping you're aware of, and then also try to envision or imagine some places we may go and we might journey together. So first, let me start off with this. So our religious movement. I wanted to start off with this reading. Everybody have a copy of this book, A Chosen Faith? If you don't have a copy, we need to get it. Do we sell books ever? Maybe we should get a few selected UU books and then have them so we can sell them during coffee time. We've done that in the past. Maybe we'll get a handful of them again. Hopefully the UUA will sell them to us at a discounted price, right? Maybe I'm reaching. All right. Hear these words from chapter 3, Deeds Not Creeds. This chapter is written by Forrest Church. This is not Forrest Church, this is Clara Barton. I have an almost complete disregard of precedent and a faith in the possibility of something better. It irritates me to be told how things always have been done. I defy the tyranny of precedent. I cannot afford the luxury of a closed mind. I go for anything new that might improve the past. And Clara Barton was a universalist, and she was the founder of the American Red Cross. Second quote. We are a liberal church community which has not only dared to preach freedom, but to live in freedom as well, which has not only prophesied the more just day to come, but has dared to live prophetically right now. And that's Mark Bellettini, a Unitarian Universalist minister. I think I was at his installation in Cincinnati, Ohio, or someplace like that. I think he was the first openly gay minister in that city, so it was a big deal back then. Yeah. Here are the words of Forrest Church. I just wanted to share this with you. Since the first century, a debate has continued within the religious community concerning whether salvation can best be secured by faith or works. Even when Unitarian and Universalist identified themselves exclusively as part of the Christian community, both leaned in the direction of works. Such biblical injunctions as, be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only, and faith without works is dead, are the cornerstones of our liberal faith. Cornerstones of our liberal faith. Don't just hear the word, live the word, right? I had a minister come to the hospital one time and preach a sermon to some 50 or 60 sick people. We were still able to wheel the near dead into the chapel back then. Some of them were in gurneys, that's right. And this preacher said he wanted you to eat the Bible. He said, eat it. Eat every word, because as you ingest the knowledge, you start to live out the words, right? Not in just some simplistic way. Some people quote the Bible all the time, but they're the wickedest devil you ever met, right? But they're quoting scripture. Shut up already. I remember Forrest used to do battle with Jerry Falwell, and he'd read these letters back and forth. Jerry Falwell would write him, and he'd write Jerry Falwell. And Forrest initially wanted to demonize Falwell, but in the end, he said, well, we're having a good-spirited debate, you know? The reality is, you want to ingest the logic and the prophecy and the limitless possibilities that exist within a Unitarian Universalist framework. And that's really what I want to stress with us today. So let's look at some of the more important things that have gone on in more recent times with us, right? All of us are aware that we were kind of the cornerstone of helping the civil rights movement, not in terms of getting on board when those black clergy and some of our rabbis, Jewish community, were staunchly in support of blacks during those early years of civil rights. But later on, as the movement was gaining strength, and that seminal moment when Dr. King asked clergy of all faiths and denominations to come, where'd they come to? Selma, right? Come on down to Selma. I need you. We need a show of peoples of all stripes, right? That's a seminal moment for the Unitarian Universalist Association. For James Reeb and his two associates traveled down to Selma and took a beating, and Reverend Reeb lost his life. But it's as a result of the loss of life of James Reeb that white Americans took notice in a way they hadn't been noticing before. Kind of like how we should be taking notice of how Georgia is allowing these ridiculous gun rights to expand and grow, right? There are moments in a nation's history when somebody's got to say enough of the nonsense, right? And that James Reeb moment, that seminal moment where Unitarian Universalist minister is laid to rest for fighting for justice, not for his middle-class white world, but for people of the black community, for people who had been so beaten and abused. And it still resonates for many people in our movement as the most important event of modern Unitarian Universalism, because where would we have been if that hadn't happened, right? It kind of transforms things. I think of 1967 to 1970. We had an era called the Black Empowerment Time. And in this era, as black power and all the symbolism is resonating through this nation, you had Unitarian Universalists of really good faith who wanted to support these black UUs in their personal development, in their ability to be no longer the voices, but to have a voice within a movement that at that time was still largely white. Guess what? We're still largely white, right? But really, it was a critical time because we actually had more black members in 1968 than we do right now. Our congregations were so open to things that were going on within the social justice community. In Brooklyn, I mean, Brooklyn's about as black a place as you can get. That's the blackest place in the United States. Brooklyn, did you know that? You have more black people that live in Brooklyn per square mile than any place else in the United States. And New York City is the blackest place in the United States, right? Mississippi, in total numbers, has more black people, but it's the breadth of a state. But New York City and really Brooklyn is the blackest place in America. The church in Flatbush had a daycare and after school that was run by the Black Panthers in Brooklyn. Dick Leonard was the minister. Some of you know and known Dick Leonard along the way, was the minister there and quite an awesome guy. But during this the 67 to 1970 period, our denomination was wrangling, was fighting about how to support these people. And the black community was asking for money. We need money to build things in black places, you know. So the church in Cleveland, those white folks, rather than fight with these black folks, gave the black folks in their congregation the church and left. and went and built a fabulous place out in the suburbs. Shaker Heights, oh dear. It's quite a Tony outpost of Cleveland. Nevertheless, things didn't go well for us. Best of intentions. Was anybody at that General Assembly when everybody walked out? You all were too young. You remember a part of that? Yeah, well, the black empowerment controversy was such a divisive thing where we supposedly had voted on funding BAWA, B-A-W-A, and then there was BAC. There was two opposing forces, the blacks with their white allies and the black folks who were by themselves. And they were like, we want money and the UUA needs to fund us and blah, blah, blah. And people got so upset, the General Assembly, they walked out. Thousands of people walked out. It was in Boston that year. Did they go to the First Church? They walk out. Well, I've got a whole tape on that. Let me see if we can show that sometime. They walked out by the thousands and it stopped the General Assembly. And there they were, 8 or 10 or 12,000 Unitarian Universalists from all over the world and the continent, just dumbfounded that our denomination could have such strife over how we can be supportive of black people. Now, truth be told, the monies that the people were asking for were astronomical. Could we have done it? Maybe. Maybe it would have cost the denomination and we would have fallen apart. Maybe there was a better way to deal with it. Because as a result of that General Assembly, more than two-thirds of the black membership of Unitarian Universalism walked away, never to come back. We've never gained those numbers back. And it's a seminal moment because those late 60s, early 70s seemed like a time where blacks and whites and Latinos and people were coming together. And it's kind of hard to imagine that fighting over money could destroy a good friendship, huh? A good marriage, right? Fighting over money. Imagine that. All right. So that's that black empowerment era. We moved past that. And we published the complete text of the leaked Pentagon Papers. And that really sets our movement into this kind of socio-political vantage point that's a non-racialized, non-gendered. It was about the wickedness of Washington, right? And exposing it in a way that maybe we had never thought possible. Kennedy could carry on in the White House, and Lyndon Johnson could carry on with whomever he was carrying on with, poor Lady Bird. The Vietnam War, I mean, we had our own horrors, right? But the Pentagon Papers, I think, shocked the nation, and the Watergate scandal. It's like an exclamation point on the insanity of the world at that time, because seeing President Nixon ultimately leave office in that helicopter taking him away, I didn't like him, Tricky Dick. I couldn't stand him. But I cried because I thought, who in God's world gives up the most powerful position on earth? In other countries, you'd have had to have revolution, right? Who could have imagined the president walking away like that? It blew me away, and it blew away so many people. So many people were turned off to our government and the policies and the politics of our nation, and yet it was a necessary moment because we still haven't got it right. The dirt and the filth of our institution politic is still alive and well, right? And we've got to be ever more vigilant. And so our association gets credit, and yet we need individual congregations, right? We need individual members to be those burrs in the side of a Cory Booker, because as much as I love Cory, I don't think nearly got as much as Cory would like to make it seem we got, right? Or our Governor Christie, I don't know who he's fooling, but the roads of New Jersey are in horrific state. It's not just Bergen County that's suffering. Everywhere I go, I'm hitting potholes and saying, what the bleep? Something's going on in this state that I thought once had wonderful roads. I used to think Jersey's roads were so much better than across the river, that something radically different is going on. Your school system still seems to be at the top or near the top of what's offered in total numbers, but if we isolate and look at Camden or Irvington or Newark or other places in the state, you go, is this the same state we're talking about? How is this possible? And where is the marching for justice, right? Because marches can bring great attention, and somehow some people have lost their way. I jump us forward into 1980s, and here's something that I really, the General Assembly in 1985 adopts our principles and purposes, and for you, my dear, I don't know if you've taken a good look at them, they're right here in the front, right in the front, right there. These are our principles and purposes, and they're adopted in 1985, and for good reason. We were fragmenting and struggling with how to hold a denomination together that was both Christian from a liberal Christian perspective and radically humanist, maybe even atheistic, right, on the other side, and what was going to happen to us. And little by little, with a great deal of discernment and some infighting, we came up with these principles and purposes, and it gives us a foundation from which we can live, not as a single ideological position for a religious movement, but the broadest possible interpretation of what human beings can come and sit in this space together for. You may be atheist and I may be, can I be Trinitarian in here? Well, maybe. Maybe, because Trinitarians don't necessarily think God is in three. They just think that the God reveals himself or herself, right, in this Trinity. I happen to like the Indian motif or idea where God reveals itself in a multiplicity of ways, whether it be an elephant-headed man named Ganesh or a rat or a Kali or, you know, in every way, from the great I am clouds to simple and regular things in human existence. So that's a radical movement for us to put this in front. I always used to say, like, if I could build a congregation myself, I'd probably have my principles and purposes on the wall behind the pulpit. Because I want everyone that comes into a Unitarian Universalist congregation to understand we are the world of ideas, and that's what these principles and purposes are trying to allude to. We're open, we're wide open, and our wide openness causes us both a great deal of positive energy to be had amongst us, and yet sometimes we're so diffuse with what we're presenting to others that people say, oh, they're confused, they don't know what they want, they're lost. But I think it's the greatest thing in religiondom that we can say you're all welcome here, far left, far right of the theological equation. Lastly, in my dance through history here, I want to bring our thoughts to the fact that we've done something radically different than the other religious movements in the United States, particularly different for a religious movement that remains a largely white institution, right? We've elected back-to-back a black president in Bill Sinkford and a Latino president in Peter Morales. And it speaks in a way to our dream. Like, we imagine a world where it doesn't matter if you're black or white. Now, I'm going to say this, and my friends in the UUA will think I'm wrong with this. I think we're still struggling with equity for women within the denomination. Because while women can be elected the moderator, We haven't had the audacity to elect a woman as president of our association. But I believe we're so much on the cutting edge, we're just slightly ahead of the American people in that we elected a black man and we elected a Latino, and I believe the United States will elect a black man, well, we did in Obama, and we're going to elect a Latino. There may be a white Latino, right? Which, okay, that would be forward progress. But let her be a woman, because that would radicalize everything in our nation. Women aren't there. What religious movement has a woman in this country in their leadership spot? You see, despite the fact that congregations all across religiondom in this nation is predominantly filled by women, some 70-some percent of the people in the pews are female, men don't go to church. I mean, we're different. Men in our movement kind of like church, but overall, men don't go to church. They're like, please, the game's coming on at 1. I'm not going to be out there. Or you know, I worked all week. You even had me going shopping with you on Saturday. I'm staying home. Whatever it is, men don't come out for church. They are not in big support. And yet the leadership, by and large, is male. It's patriarchal. It's constructed in a way that doesn't allow women to be the most free, the most vocal, the most forceful that women can be. It took a woman by the name of Bell Hooks to try to help transform me, because I was operating under some dinosaur type policies, you know, and procedures. You know, I didn't mind that my mother and father left their law practice together and she came home and cooked. I didn't know there was anything wrong with that. I just thought she loved her family and was willing to do this. My dad should have got off his seat and helped her. Better yet, he should have led the meal sometimes, which rarely happened. So despite the best of intentions, even in a household where you think parents are equal, a boy like me was able to be lulled into the patriarchal manifestation of things. And so I say all this to get into this dialogue with you about what do we do? How do we transform both ourselves and our congregations? How do we move ourselves from the theoretical and the hypothetical and the I dream a world into some real concrete doing? And it starts with a focus, which Unitarian Universalists are not known for. We're so broad, everybody's doing their own thing. There was a song, I got my own thing, I got it, right? But I don't want us to have our own thing. What are you known for in your community? I wanted to bring the standing on the side of love poster, because that's a powerful thing that the New Jersey congregations have really gotten behind and have made a difference in Trenton, right? We've been able to help other religious people push this state in a way that's made marriage equity. Is it a reality? Have we got it in New Jersey? Yeah. So we made that positive change, and it took the religious leadership, because that's the basic reason why people are anti marriage equality, because it's Bible says it's a sin. Nonsense. All right? It's nonsense. If there is a creator and author of everything and everyone is created by that same author, how could somebody not be allowed to have their love the way they understand love? It just makes no sense at all. So I'm after a change, a radical change, and the change is this, that we focus on how we want to change the world. Change the world from our unique perspective as a congregation in Essex County. What is the greatest need in Essex County of the people? Have we got a lack of education? Is it a lack of good housing? Is it a lack of food? Is it a lack of fresh air? Is it a lack of good water? What's going on here? And trying to discern exactly what it is we could put our force behind. Because when a few committed people put their force behind something, you are able to transform things. It's a radical transformation of the self, because you do change anytime you get behind an issue. You change. It manifests itself into a new way of being. It's at hand. You're imbued with more energy because you've got something that you've bought into wholly. What's the last thing you bought into wholly? Was it the person you fell in love with? Was it a new diet? What's the last thing you bought into wholly? Was it that I can do something so different and so amazing that by my lonesome I'm going to? See, rugged individualism is a wonderful thing at times. It might be the very spark that gets you going in the first place, rugged individualism, right? Somehow laying there in your bed or sitting in your chair, you've imagined what you can do to make the difference. Did you stop mowing your lawn and just let it go? What do they call it now? Is it called weeding? No, it's not called weeding. There's some movement to get people to stop mowing their lawns. Nesting, harvesting. It's something so that the wildflowers and other things will just bloom. And of course, the rodents and the snakes and everything will move in closer too. But, part of the creation too. So we have to kind of figure that out. But are we ready as a religious movement to be the people that now represent the GLBT community in a way that nobody else in the nation does? Is that where our movement is going? And if that's where our movement's going, then we've got to do something radically different here in Essex County. Because as I look at the various programs that are available for GLBT youth in Essex County, there's a paucity. There are very few programs available. And here in a very black kind of and Latino community, there's a real lack of support for these young people because the churches that have the biggest sway with the political leadership in this area are fundamentalist in their interpretation and don't really want to help these young people. They want to change them into what their idea is of what a healthy young person's sexuality is. They, in fact, have some billboards that I've seen, and I did notice one in Newark. I was riding through, what's that neighborhood where the cathedral is in Newark? I was up there last year, and I saw a billboard that said counseling to help people who were gay, and I was shocked to see that in Newark. Yeah, it was, and I don't know if it was sponsored by the Catholic Church. I don't want to demonize them because the new Pope obviously is trying to work radical changes. I mean, his own energy seems so open to a world in a different way, but I was shocked to see that in Newark, New Jersey. And then I thought about it. I said, any place that's a quote-unquote minority-based community is going to have a more difficult time with GLBT issues. It will remain a crisis for the people, for the young people, for the older people that come out of those communities who want to be openly GLBT. And so I offer that one up as a possibility, but I sat with Lisa this morning and I made a list, a top 10 list of things that I thought were worthy of Unitarian Universalists. And I started with air because I'm someone that has asthma, and shame on me for having smoked for 20 years. I did damage to my lungs, but I live in a community, all of us that live in this metropolitan area, like we're smokers. They do an autopsy and open these suckers up. They're black and dirty inside. We've been breathing the most horrific of airs. How can anybody talk about justice as a big overarching subject and the air we breathe is bad? I can't get my hands around the most fundamental of things. Air we breathe, water we drink. Is the watershed protected well here? There's a reason that New Jersey in particular, but other places in this region have such a high level of cancer. It's in the air, it's in the water. There's something going on here that isn't happening to every other part of this continent. It's happening here in a huge way, and we're not paying attention, and it's a justice issue for everybody, our air and our water. And I don't know when the last time anybody in communities like this really was like, you know, Earth Day came and Earth Day goes, we have some programs, but it's an everyday issue. My dad always had a white handkerchief, And somebody pressed them, they were stiff. And I remember him dabbing his brow. And every so often I'd have a runny nose or something. He'd say, "Daggone it, boy, you didn't bring your own." I'd take his handkerchief. But my dad had dabbed his brow, but there wasn't soot on it. When I use a white handkerchief now and dab my brow, I almost always have black speckles on that handkerchief. I don't use the white ones anymore. I went to colored ones so I could hide it. It's kind of like the guys in the Navy all wanted to have brown underwear so they could hide everything. But, you know, listen, that's a TMI moment, but it's a reality of life. If you don't want the filth of the world to show, you get some colored clothing, it hides everything better, all right? And it's the same with your handkerchief or anything else, right? You want to have hand towel in the bathroom at home, you're not going to use a white hand towel. That thing need to be changed after two uses, right? Because most people don't wash their hands all that well. Turn on the water, lather, rinse. No. Washing your hands in a hospital context means you sing happy birthday to yourself. You need it's a much longer event. It's lathering for all that time. Get through that stanza of happy birthday to you. So I'm advocating that we not necessarily support any one subject or one area. But I want us to become radicalized, doggone it, some righteous indignation about some subject that's going to get us up in arms. I can't think of, for me, the gun violence in Essex County is the one that kind of turns my stomach the most. Because when we lose young people to gun violence, there's no comeback from that. It's another voice, another working body, another maybe brilliant mind that didn't quite get to its fullness yet. It won't ever bloom for us. It won't ever produce the good works we need these young minds to produce. And we've got a horrific situation in our midst. The recidivism and the jail, the sentencing issues. Do we hold the DA, the local DA, accountable? Have we looked at his record? Has he tried or she tried to prosecute everybody to the fullest extent of the law? Or are they really someone who's trying to do justice work? Because I know my brother was a DA. The only way you make a name for yourself is securing convictions. Locking them up for the longest possible time. Wasting our tax dollars warehousing humanity as opposed to transforming people. Better yet, how about we never let them get to the place where they are? So I don't know who amongst us wants to then maybe think about, well, do I become a visiting grandfather or mentor, a child in one of these schools next to us? What would it mean if this congregation mentored two or three kids from that, from the school? Huh? Maybe we get an essay contest going and see which bright little mind, or maybe we pick the child that doesn't win the essay contest, the one that actually needs the most support. You see, we've got a way of elevating those who may not need the help the most. It's nice to help somebody get to Princeton, or Drew. Oh, that's great. How about helping somebody finish grade school? You know the dropout rate here? It's not good. We've got one of the highest dropout rates in the country right here in our midst. What would it take for us to mentor some of these young people? Where's the local Job Corps Center? I know there's one somewhere. Yeah. Job Corps is a place that's filled with young people who, for whatever reason, didn't make it in high school. Mostly dropouts. Some of them come with a GED, but the GED is about an eighth grade level of reasoning, and if it's that. I think the state of Pennsylvania's GED is written on a sixth grade level. As if you could imagine that that would be a high school equivalency, how you think and write on a sixth grade level. All I could think about was the young girl that didn't need training bra sitting across the aisle from me in the sixth grade. Couldn't be concerned about the schooling. Did we read Huckleberry Finn back then? I don't know. The reality is, from a Unitarian Universalist standpoint, we've got an opportunity to make a transformation, not only of the lives of people around us, but we've been able, with a relatively small number of people, to transform a nation. We transform a nation because I often say that black people are the moral compass of the United States, because as black folks push, everybody else has seemed to follow. Native Americans and Latinos and others got their civil rights agendas going after black folks got them going. But I actually think the Unitarian Universalists are the moral compass for white America, and that's really who all of us have to help change. We change them as we educate them. We change them as we show them how you make a difference. We, as a congregation, are at the precipice of a transformation for ourselves. Somehow, some way, we're going to find a way to fill these pews again. We're going to find a way to have programming that will serve this local community, not just with the religious groups, the diversity of people that use your space. This space, I came and said, Ethiopia, Jamaican church, it's alive and well here. But it's more than that. It's making our space a focal point for justice for this community. What justice issue? That's up to you. You know, the ministers sell a thing at GA, and it usually reads, when the people lead, the ministers follow. When you decide, here's the subject that we want you, minister, paid staff person, to go and spend your hours on helping to transform the neighborhood or the community, then the ministers are imbued with that ability because you've said so. We write your check. This is what we need out of you. See, it's not enough to entertain somebody on Sunday. You've got to be able to walk the walk and stand your ground, not in a horrific Florida sense, but in a way that shows people love. Love that can't be denied. If I'm willing to get arrested for somebody else's issue, so be it. If I'm willing to sleep here so we could house the homeless overnight. I don't know what's possible. Do we need to do that? Do we need to have a food pantry? Do I need to go to every supermarket in the county and get some food? But food stamps have been cut recently. Are you paying attention? They're cutting food stamps. People are hungrier than ever in a nation that's got plenty. So what subject is it that you want to address, because the needs are so great we could be overwhelmed by it, right? But I'm not asking you to be overwhelmed. I'm begging you to decide what it is that you want to make the difference with. Because we can do it. You've been holding on. You've been fighting the good fight. You've made the space available to people. We've got Haitian people coming in for language, right? Get their English down. We got Latinos coming too, getting their language down. You're doing it. You've got this program there next door, and I'm not sure what's going on there, but the idea behind it is a righteous one. But righteousness without critical analysis is wasted resource. The critical analysis has to come once you say what you're after, what you want to do, Whose cause will we take up, and shall we get the other congregations that aren't so far away from us to support us? What's that quote by Eleanor Roosevelt? Is it the one that says about the few people? That's Margaret Mead. Why do I want to give everything to Eleanor Roosevelt? I really like her because I think Franklin needed to be. I mean, brilliant guy, but he played dirty with his wife. I got more respect for my woman than that. You know, you gotta come correct. So, Margaret Mead, 12 people that make a stand for something. How hard would it be for us to get a news crew here if we made some noise about an issue? What if we put a chain across a school and said we want some special funding for this group of children, because this group of children, they've already built prison space for the third graders next door. You understand me? If the die is already cast, and are we willing to allow another generation to be caught up into that sick system? Who do we owe kindness and love and generosity to? Well, I'm going to tell you, you start with yourself. You can't help somebody else if you need a whole lot of help yourself. So we've got to be healthy, right? And we start with that center. We center ourselves, we ground ourselves, we deepen our understanding, and we step into whatever transformative work we're going to do together from a healthy place. I feel good. I've got this ability. I have some time. I have some resources to share. I can tutor someone. I can help someone read. I can teach music. I can give somebody something that they desperately need to change their life trajectory. And that's what it's got to be about, changing the trajectory of the lives of the people around us who are in need. This community won't be a viable place to live if it has to be split down economic lines. Ultimately, the economic disparity will destroy this nation. The haves and the have-nots. The Hatfields and the McCoys never understood what it was really going to be about. One of them was going to say, you know what, Grandpa left the day to me, and you McCoys got to get the bet. Now get the heck up out of here. I got the property, and the state troopers come to remove your stringy-haired, unwashed backsides. You understand, the economic disparity ultimately cuts across the gender, the orientation, the racial, the religious. Those who have will marginalize all of us. It's most evident with the people we can see who are in need, but it's happening to very middle-class people. And it will continue to happen. So, I like that soul train. Woo! Soul train! I want us to be about transformation training. Get on board, little children. It's time to ride. And ride we will once you all tell me what it is you want, how you want me to spend my hours, and say, let's do it wholeheartedly. Now, I've got a proposal that I will give the congregation for the June board meeting about an after-school program, because my thing is, I was a latchkey kid. That's Gordon's thing. Latchkey kids are the most likely to end up in trouble of anybody in this nation. And I watch these children leave these schools at 3 o'clock. And I don't know if you remember Diana Ross's concert in Central Park. And they said that Brooklyn people were wilding in Central Park. They put it all on Brooklyn. Came to Central Park to wild. They were jumping out of the trees and everything. And they didn't have a concert in Central Park of a popular singer. I didn't know that Diana Ross was a popular singer at that point. But anyway, they didn't have another popular performer in Central Park for a very long time. These kids don't have places to go. There's not enough programming here. I do know that. I've done my homework about what's available here in the local vicinity. There is not enough after-school programming. And there is real gang activity, and these children are being recruited at an earlier and earlier age. The drug usage and the child pregnancy rate is high here. That's my pet. issue. But whatever the issue is, let us find one at our congregational meeting. Let's put it before those who will come and vote. Let's find out what you want to do, because I went into ministry to do work. To do work, huh? We got work to do in the NBA. You hear about that owner in Los Angeles? Who the heck owns an NBA team if you've got racial issues? That's not the place to go. Go buy a hockey team. That, I mean, if you don't want to be around people of color, get yourself a hockey team and own the Winnipeg, you know, outlet of it. That's all right. Listen, people have a right to be with their own kind if that's what they want, but it doesn't make sense that you would want to own something that's going to have so many people that you disparage under your employment. Anyway, I had to throw that in because I couldn't get past it. Unitarian Universalists, in short, have done amazing things. Our 300,000 have made a real difference in Congress, in state houses, in local vicinities. Right here in this state, we've made a difference. We can help transform some aspect of somebody's life right here. I know you all individually do good works. I'm not asking you to give up your individual issues that you work towards. I'm asking for this congregation to stand for something so that when I feel well again and I start getting to the meetings that are being held around here, I can say we stand strong behind a particular issue. We don't have the strength of numbers to be so broad. Let's focus our energies. Let's commit to something and let's see our way to making somebody else's life better. Amen.